Okay. So it's very wonderful work of the caretakers to make sure that we get the electricity back on just in time for the talk. It's a wonderful job there, Scotty and Christina. Anyway, so what was wrong with the electricity? Didn't you pay the bills?
Blackout.
Was that because there was an attack from the enemy aircraft? No. Okay. So again, welcome to this first talk over here. And first of all, hopefully that those of you who haven't been here before and or haven't been accustomed to a retreat center where we tell jokes, we wonder why. Why is humor a part of our meditation practice? And of course, one of the reasons is because it does create some relaxation inside of us. Whenever you are too serious, you ask why. Why are you serious? What are you trying to achieve by this? And struggling and striving is, sometimes, you know, the story which happens so often, it happened to me, happened to many people, is, you know, we're struggling to try and do something, to try and get somewhere. In the old Zen story, there was a poor farmer, and he needed to light the fire to be able to boil the water to cook his rice for his evening meal. And he didn't know where he'd left the matches. So he, being late in the evening, it was quite dark, so he took a candle, which was already lit, looking where the matches were, so that he could find them to light the fire to cook his rice. And sometimes that's what we do. We look for peace. We look for tranquility. We look for some... It's really strange that because I'm a Buddhist monk for so many years, whenever I sneeze, I always sneeze three times. One for the Buddha, one for the Dhamma, one for the Sangha. Never twice or once. Anyway, so he was looking for a candle, looking first of the matches with a candle. You can realize what light actually is, what flame is, what heat is. Then it'd be so easy to cook his rice. In the same way, if we knew what are we aiming for in this meditation retreat? What's the purpose? And the purpose is, you know, to be us, have some peace, have some tranquility. But you always feel that tranquility and peace is somewhere else than other than right here where you're sitting. We're always going somewhere. So years ago, when I was in Nolamara Center on the afternoon, busy, and then I had some papers in my hand going into the office, and one of the old friends said, "Oh, how are you, Ajahn Brahm?" And I'm sure that you've made the same response. "I'm getting there," I said. And then he asked me, "Where exactly is it that you're getting to?" I said, "Okay, you busted me. I'm going somewhere, but I'm not being here. And I know where my destination is. You know where I'm going? It's one of three places in Perth. It's either to Karrakatta Cemetery, Pinneroo Cemetery, or Fremantle Cemetery. That's where I'm going. You're either going into a box, or you're going to be cremated." Although I've told many people recently that, you know, being cremated, that's bad for the environment. It takes too much sort of fuel, too much heat. A lot of the crematoriums are done with gas, you know, supporting the oil and gas industry. In the old days, yeah, you used to have some wood, but even the wood, you know, get from the forest. Still, that's, you know, the wood could be used for other things. And burying a person in the ground and just beautiful earth and soil, disturbing it, that's not environmentally friendly. So my preferred way of disposing of my body when I die. I've told all the monks this, but I want to spread it around as much as possible so that my last wish will be respected. I want to be mulched. And then it goes straight back into the ground. So that's very good. So, you're not offended by that. It's environmentally. I'm that mate when I'm dead first, not before I'm dead. and that way. Because sometimes all these ceremonies which people have when they die, oh my goodness me, is that really respect or is that an indulgence? And I think it's more like an indulgence myself. So if you really want to respect my last wish, the trouble is that people say, well, Ajahn Brahm, it's very unlikely that you'll come back as a ghost and haunt us if we don't follow your last wish. Therefore, we can do whatever we want. You're gone. But anyway, where was I going with this? Oh yeah, where are you going? And sometimes you ask, where are you going in your life? And isn't it the case you're always going somewhere? Always going to the next destination, always going somewhere else, and never actually being here. And that's why when I do travel around, and I tell people I don't go anywhere, I don't travel. I just sit in an aircraft, close my eyes, meditate, or take a rest. When I open my eyes, I'm in Penang. I didn't do any traveling, I just sat there. It was the aircraft that did all the traveling, not me. Different perspective. So when you ask me, are you going to be here next week? I said, yeah, I'm always here. But sometimes you're not here, that's all. So where are you going in this one? It's just different perspective. You're always going to be here. And we have all these ideas in our head that we're going somewhere. And all it means is we're not paying any attention to where we are. And you know, a lot of times we've worked so hard, you know, got visas, got sort of air tickets, you know, got permission from our boss at work or from your wife or your husband or your family to get here eventually. And then once you're here, sort of, can't we just say, wow, I've arrived. I'm here. So when I do go travelling also, I see lots of people, but I don't see many human beings. You go to all these big cities, and you go to Singapore, you go to Seoul, and then you go to, where else another bigger city, Bangkok, London. Do you ever see many people? You see lots of people, but you don't see many beings. They're not being, they're going. See many human goings, but very few human beings actually being here. And so, for you, are you going to be here for the next 8 days? Or are you going to go somewhere? Sitting in your meditation, your eyes closed, and having all these great fantasies and dreams and plans, and seeing, well, you know, that deep meditation I had a few minutes ago, I'm sure that was a number there somewhere. Maybe that's a lottery ticket. Maybe when you win a lottery, imagine how much you could win. And what would you do with it once you win it? And then you could maybe just, you know, give a little bit for Bodhinyana Monastery, 0.0001%. And the rest, you know, all this other stuff which people actually ask me that, you know, sometimes. Can you give us a lottery number, Ajahn Brahm? No, you can do it. Come on, you do it. Please give us a lottery number. And they say, well, what's in it for me? So, well, I will give you a 5%. Or, and I did all the work. You only give me 5%. He's only messing around. But what would happen? Recently we had this big horse race over in Australia, the Melbourne Cup. And they asked me, can you please predict who's going to win the Melbourne Cup? I said, yeah, I can do that. I said, really? Please, answer. I said, well, donation first. is a horse. Who's going to win it? That's not what I asked. But why is it we always think that once I get rich, then I'll be happy? Once I cure my cancer, then I'll be happy. Once I solve all my problems, then I'll be happy. Once I pay off my debts, then I'll be happy. Once I... What else are you doing? Once you finish the four Kuti project, the Dhammasara, then you'll be happy. Once you... I don't know. What do you want to be happy? So much of our life, we're going somewhere to get happiness. We're looking for the matchbox when we've got a candle in our hand. So instead, when you're here at Charnham Grove Retreat Center, don't go anywhere. Just learn how to be here for the next 8 or 9 days and just see what here is actually like. It's amazing how many times people run away from this present moment thinking the next moment's going to be better. Thinking somewhere else is going to be the perfect place. Thinking that the next teacher has just got the right meditation method. Thinking that, oh yeah, this next teacher has interpreted it correctly. The first time someone's interpreted it correctly. You go all around searching for happiness and for peace. And if you'd only stop for a few minutes and just stay here, you find out there's all the peace and happiness you could ever want. It's hard to get similes to explain this point, but so many times people search for peace, and as they're searching for peace, they're destroying it in the very search. They're looking for happiness, and in just neglecting what they have, they miss the happiness. It's a saying of a philosopher. I remember writing down his name, but I think it began with a B or something. B-U something else. Oh, that's right, the third letter was D. The Buddha. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. You can't appreciate what you already have when you want something more. So, Charnham Grove Retreat Center. Do you want something more? Is it good enough? Hands up if you think this retreat center could be improved. Okay, the caretaker. Put your hands up if you think Ajahn Brahm could be improved. Be careful, this is being photographed. But all the time when you want something more, you can't appreciate what you already have. And that's why people strive until they die. And they never find any peace or happiness. There's always something more to be done, more to be achieved, more to be fixed. And you'll find that that way there's no peace at all in life. However, we do have some very wonderful attitudes of being content and easily satisfied. Those of you who were up this morning doing the chant, the Metta Sutta, this is what should be done by one who's skilled in goodness. May they be contented and easily satisfied, not proud and demanding in nature. And that's a very powerful teaching. Be content and easily satisfied. This is good enough. This seat is good enough. Mind you, it could be softer. It could be suited to my special requirements. The aircon could be colder. I was really surprised. I was really hot last night. But Ajahn Nisarana, he had a blanket on. What? How can that be? We all have our different bodies and stuff. So you can't get it exactly perfect, or can you? What is perfection? And perfection is not trying to make it more perfect, is but to let go of wanting, to be contented, and realize this is good enough. So, yeah, it may be not the most comfortable cushion, but you know, it's much better than I had when I was a young monk. When I was a young monk in Thailand, oh, we didn't have any cushions at all, except the big senior monks. And I'm sure you've seen photos of me. I was all really skin and bones. I was really thin. I was, you know, just so bony and because the food was terrible there. You know, just I was, you wouldn't recognize me. It was like somebody who's been in a prison, you know, for years and years and years. You know, when I was in Thailand. And I'm making up for it now. But when I was small, you're all bony, and there was no cushions. You'd be sitting for hours on this hard concrete floor. And it wasn't like just concrete floors you find in Australia, which, you know, nice and level. This was done by the villagers, so I had bumps all over the place. So even the floor wasn't level, and you had to sit on it for hours and hours and hours. And I remember just looking up at the big senior monks like Ajahn Chah. They had all these cushions. And you know, they didn't need cushions. They had their own upholstery, like I have now. And I thought, oh, the junior monks should have all the big cushions, not the senior ones, because the senior ones don't need it. But then, of course, you've got to, now I'm a senior monk, and I've got all the big cushions, but the big cushions come with a lot of suffering. You have to talk, answer questions, defend yourself, whatever, work hard. I'm supposed to be working so hard to work my butt off, but it still hasn't worked off. Still there. Work my nose to the grindstone and it still protrudes. But anyway, my fingers to the bone. No, still lots of flesh, I can't see any bone yet. So, all the time that when you want something more, you can't appreciate what you already have. And so, there was a brilliant story from, again, I repeat these stories, but it's really worthwhile listening to them and getting them inside of you. It was something which goes against our modern world. This was from Ajahn Buddhadasa when he was building his hall. And this was in the south of Thailand, in Nakhon Si Thammarat province. And where he was building his hall came to the retreat period, the 3-month rains retreat. And he sent all the builders home. So come back in 3 months' time, once the retreat is finished. And so all the builders had to go home. So the place was quiet for 3 months. But people would still come to visit, and one gentleman in particular came to visit and asked Ajahn Buddhadasa, when is your hall going to be finished? At which point this great monk replied, the hall is finished. At which point the visitor sort of commented, I know that you are sort of a very modern monk. Is this some statement? You're going to leave the hall like this with no roof on it, with no sort of glass in the windows and with bits of wood all over the floor? Is this some sort of statement about, you know, modern art? And he said, no. He said, well, what's going on? How can you say this is finished when there's so many building operations to complete? And at that point, the great monk replied, sir, what's done is finished. And then he walked off to have some meditation. And we thought, what a wonderful thing that is, to say, what's done is finished, so you can come and meditate and let go. But please, don't use that as an excuse in the morning time if you're on these sort of clean-up duties. And you tell Bianca, and Bianca says, have you finished the washing up yet? He said, no, as Ajahn Brahm says, what's done is finished. Bye-bye, Bianca. you'll get me in big trouble. But you can get the idea of what we're doing. The same in the for the Anagarikas from Bodhinyana Monastery. I hope you finished the clean-up this morning before you came over here, Adam and Chanda. Or did you just tell everybody over there, oh, what's done is finished, I'm getting out of here. But you can see what we mean when it comes to the meditation practice. Sometimes, have you tied up all your loose ends in the places where you came from? Have you finished everything? Have you still got wondering what's going to happen with, you know, your relations, domestic situation, or with the economy, or with, I don't know, what's happening in Sri Lanka, or whatever's happening over where and there and here ever? What's done is finished. That's the only way you can find some peace in this world. Years ago, it's another nice little Zen story. There was this, in Japan, there was this monk who was an incredible gardener. He had developed one of these Zen gardens, which was the most famous in the whole of Japan. It was so famous that people would come from all over, even from overseas, to admire the incredible beauty and just the balance and just the Zen garden. And so this old monk once heard about this, an old meditation monk. And whenever any old meditation monks are in one of my stories, you know, they're always going to come out on top. Don't mess with old meditation master monks. So he decided to go and check it out. How come that this garden is so beautiful? So he arrived early in the morning. It was locked, it was closed. So he climbed over the fence and he hid behind the bushes when the gardening monk came out. And the gardening monk had just come out from his meditation and surveyed the garden. They had a big plum tree in the middle of the garden, followed around with rocks and a little stream. But overnight, many leaves and twigs had fallen. So he looked at them and contemplated. If you are an artist with a sense of perfection, you cannot rush. You've just got to allow the scene to actually to percolate into you. Just like when you brew a cup of tea, you cannot rush for this flavour and all of the beautiful parts of tea to actually to infuse the water until it's just the right colour. Making tea is an art. Isn't that the case, Venerable Sarana? And also something which has gone through such an important, long procedure. Takes a long time to savour. As you know, that I love my tea as an English monk. And that's also why I became a master, a disciple of the great tea master, Ajahn Chah Tea. But anyway, when this monk had contemplated, he got two big baskets and he went all around the garden, picking up all the leaves and the twigs which had fallen from the tree the night before. But he didn't just put them in any basket. He took up a leaf and examined it with his wisdom to see whether that could be used as part of his garden. If it was a beautiful, colourful, a leaf which had artistic merit, he put it in one basket. If you looked at this and say, no, that's a hopeless, useless basket, useless leaf, he put it in the rubbish basket. Meticulously, taking all the time was necessary, he divided those leaves into two different baskets.
and the useless rubbish leaves he took round the back of the temple to put on the compost pile, leaving him with just the one basket of artistic leaves. But the next part of the ceremony or the procedure was really important. He had a cup of tea, and then he sat down and meditated to prepare his mind for the most important part of the gardening. And then when he was ready, he took every leaf and put it just in the right place in the garden. Sometimes he put it and he thought that was the perfect place for the leaf, and he stood back and said, no. And he just turned it a slight bit. Yes. He was one of these people who was gifted with a sense of how colours interact, how the space between them was as important as actually the space inside of them. And everything which had such a great artistic sense. I don't know how people can do this, but sometimes you give them something to paint or something to arrange, and the result is just amazing. This monk had talent. And so, when he was finished, he admired his work, and it really looked so impressive. And before he opened up the gates to the visitors, at that point the old meditation monk came out. He said, I've been watching you all morning. I'm so impressed with your effort and patience, your diligence and your artistic sense. Your garden, said the old monk, is almost perfect. And that word, almost. The colour drained from the gardening monk's face. His lips started to quiver. Did you say, almost? I want it to be perfect. It's only almost perfect. And so the gardening monk fell to his knees and put his hands up and said, oh, you've been sent to me by the great bodhisattvas to teach me how to make my garden 100% perfect. Please let me know what I should do next so my garden is improved even more. And the old monk looked at him, do you really want to know? If any old meditation monk says that, say, no, I don't want to know. This old monk, this young monk was a bit stupid, said, no, please let me know. Release your wisdom and compassion to me. Okay. So the old monk went to the centre of the garden and put his really still big, strong hands around the old plum tree. And he was still pretty fit, this old monk. And he shook the hell out of that plum tree. He moved it all over the place, left, right, up and down, and leaves and twigs fell everywhere. And the young gardening monk was horrified. Oh, my morning's work for nothing. You've messed up my garden. It's leaves and twigs wherever they wanted to be. And then the old meditation monks looked at it and said, now that's perfect, and walked away. I always liked that story. So, is your meditation perfect? Let me give it a shake. It's all over the place. And I say, ah, yeah, that's perfect. Stories like that I love, simply because they go against what you're taught and told. Let's go against your expectations and teach you to learn how to accept, embrace, to be with, not against, to be in this moment, to realize that when you want something more, you can't enjoy what's already here. And wanting something more, wanting, craving, as the Buddha taught in his first teachings, that is a cause of suffering. Letting go of wanting, that's a cause of peace and happiness. But, people keep saying, well, no, I've got to make it perfect before I can let go. You'll waste your whole life making it perfect before you can let go. You can, how many years? 36 years now in Bodhinyana Monastery. And I've been working there for such a long time. Is it perfect yet? People say, when is the monastery going to be finished? It's like people actually say that when they're going on a journey, are we there yet? Are we there yet? You know who says that? Kids say that. Are you there yet in the path to enlightenment? How much more to go? Nowhere to go. So after a while, we realize in this path of meditation, it's something a little bit different than what you do in the rest of your life. In other words, what's done is finished. So, stop and enjoy this moment. If I don't do anything, it'll get worse. No, if you do something, it gets worse. Try it out. I challenge you for the next 8 days not to do anything. Can you achieve that great goal of not doing anything? Can you? In theory, but in actual practice, we're compulsive doers. Compulsive going places. Always want to improve. Get something. And improvements, it just goes on and on and on and on and on. And those of you who know your Buddhism, house builder, you have been seen. Your rafters are now broken, your gables are shot. It's not going to build anything more for me. This is what the Buddha was talking about. Stop building achievements. That's why in this, sometimes people come and ask me sometimes, oh, you know, they've got deep meditation. What's that, Ajahn Brahm? Ah, just deep meditation. But what stage is it? Ah, no stage in particular. Ah, I mean, I thought I'm getting close to jhanas. Ah, nah. So, Ajahn Brahm, please say it's getting close to jhanas. Nah. Am I enlightened? Nah. But I work so hard. Yeah, so what? Who is enlightened? This is actually one of the things, when we do stuff, we find all we're doing is creating more suffering for ourselves. Achievements, certificates. Have you got any certificates? I used to have a certificate, MA in theoretical physics. What a waste of time that is. I've forgotten most of it. If you gave me the same exam today, I would fail, for sure. Even I remember when I was 11, my first certificate I was very proud of, to be able to swim 25 metres as a 10-year-old. I don't think I could do that now. I should give up my certificate. We feel all proud of our certificates and stuff. So that's why we don't... Well, actually, I do give certificates here. But not sort of enlightenment certificates. If you don't know the story, it's a classic story. Over in Sri Lanka, there was this old auntie came from the countryside of Sri Lanka to visit her children over in Colombo. And she was staying there for a few weeks, and they thought, what gift can we give to our auntie? You know, she's always been so helpful and good to us, always looking after us. But, you know, she doesn't want sort of a new dress or jewelry. You know, she's too old for that. And she was always a very, very devout Buddhist, going to the temples to offer dana for food for the monks and the nuns and keeping her precepts. And they said, the sort of gift, we will sponsor her for a meditation retreat. She'd love that. But it was one of these meditation retreats where not only did they teach meditation, but they gave little teachings on the suttas and examined them afterwards. And if they did very well, the teachers there would reward them with a certificate. And so at the end of, I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks retreat, at the end of the 3 or 4 weeks retreat, the teachers there, they came together and they assessed the old auntie's progress, and they came up to her with a lot big smiles with a certificate, saying, "Auntie, you've done very, very well. We've seen you meditate, we've listened to you with your interviews, and we've checked out, you know, your understanding of Buddhism and the Dhamma. And we proudly, with great joy, we've all decided unanimously that you've achieved the first stage of enlightenment, a stream winner. You are a so-one, as they say in Sri Lanka. Congratulations, Auntie, on your amazing achievement." Because when you're a stream winner, it means you no longer can get reborn in the lower realms. You have to become enlightened. And you ask any of the Sri Lankans here, they say, "Oh, being a stream winner, oh, that's amazing. If I'm a so-one, yay!" But this auntie was really upset. She was really angry. She was ropeable, as they say in Australia. Where did the ropeable word come from? I don't know where that comes from anyway, but it means you're really upset. And anyway, that they asked, "Why are you upset, Auntie? You're a stream winner." And she looked at them, just with her Margaret Thatcher look. "You don't remember me, do you?" I said, "No, we don't remember you, Auntie. I was here about 4 years ago. And 4 years ago, you told me that I was a non-returner. You've demoted me." You can't give certificates. If anyone wants to get us, the only certificate I give here is a grumpy license. The license to be you, whatever you happen to be from time to time. So, that idea of trying to get somewhere, trying to achieve something. Our job here, that's just more suffering. That's the way of the world. Instead, and also there's all that stuff which I learnt, all that stuff which I studied, which I tried to memorize. As you get older, you tend to lose it. You forget things. All of that hard work, what's the point? I know that I told a few people this, that a couple of years ago over in Singapore, in Renchi Hospital, that's a Buddhist hospital, free hospital, and I was invited to give a presentation together with a senior doctor, a professor, who specialized in dementia and end-of-life care. And we were discussing about, you know, dementia and just, you know, what causes it, how we can prevent it. He was talking from a medical side. I was talking from a more spiritual side, a meditation. But I was really taken aback when he said quite clearly the signs of dementia. Number one, you can't remember the past. Number two, you're not worried about the future. Number three, you're socially disengaged. And I said, "Wow, I've been teaching so many people that for the last 20 years. Let go of the past. Live in peace and solitude by yourself. Be an island unto yourself." So now I know the cause of dementia. Me. But you know that when we do remember the past, we collect the past, what do we remember? It's all the bad stuff. The stupid stuff. He did this, she did that. Why did that happen? It shouldn't be done. And all the good stuff we just tend to forget, take for granted. I don't know if anybody woke you up last night by banging the door. Do you remember that? How many times didn't they bang the door? Do you remember that? How many times that when you were driving the car, you got caught by the speed camera? Do you remember that? How many times you didn't get caught by the speed camera? Do you remember that? So we always tend to remember the bad stuff, which so-called spoils our day, because we allow it to spoil our day. I don't know if it's happened yet, but I'm sure it will happen. You're in a cottage with five other people. And you say, why can't these people in my cottage be more quiet? And they come and say to me, why can't she be more quiet? All the same. Even though, I know people have asked me this, says, there are serial snorers on this retreat. So can't we get a blacklist? So you can tell me in your cottage who the snorer is. You can actually tell the room. You don't need to go inside and look. You can hear them throughout the whole cottage. And then I can take the room number and find out who it is. And then, no, we can't be that unkind to ban them from the retreat, but we'll put all the bad snorers in the same cottage. So that means... But of course, that's missing the whole point. Nevertheless, I mean, you can be quieter. Each one of us can be quieter. That's why. Simple mindfulness and kindness practice. When you go into your room to have a rest or take a cup of tea or shower, see if you can open the door quietly so no one hears you entering. And you close the door quietly. And you go into your room. No one hears you coming. No one hears you going. You know, you can do that. Burglars can do that. If they can do that, why can't you? But you know what happens? Bang! And they go in there. They make a cup of tea. Stirring it up. At 2 o'clock in the morning. Thank you for your compassion. So, be. And it's a really good practice, you know, to be able to do that. You have to be mindful, you're kind, you're compassionate to the other people you share your cottage with. And it also helps other people. And then also it means that it's hard, you have to go slower to actually to open the door and close the door without much noise. You have to be slower to stir your tea. But it can be done. So if you can do that, you're being more restrained and mindful and kind. Which means that you're not in a rush to get somewhere. Being here is the most important. Which brings me up to, I should be talking about some meditation rather than preparations, but general preparation for meditation. And actually this is all you ever need for meditation instructions. Keep it simple. We are in an age of information overload, as you all know. So try and keep it simple. Now is the most important. That's right, the Emperor's Three Questions, meditation. You must all know this by now, I say every retreat, and it's in books and goodness knows what else. Emperor's Three Questions, an emperor just fed up with religion, wanted to find his own religion, had the power to be able to do that. Please don't share this story with Mr. Trump, otherwise Mr. Trump will start his own religion. But the emperor realizes there's only three things you really need to know in life. You know, when is the most important time, who is the most important person, what's the most important thing to do. And of course, you know, you probably all know the answer to that. When, now is the only time we ever have. So don't try and be enlightened sometime other than now. If you want some peace, right now, it's there for you. But if you go looking for peace somewhere else, you don't catch it. Now is the most important time. The most important thing to do is not to strive, not to develop, not to get rid of your enemies. This is not about pest control. You know what pest control means, don't you? I don't like you, out. I don't like this person, spray them. my husband, exterminate. Wife, toxic. And that's what people do. I mean, I'm exaggerating there, but anything which is too much of a problem and difficult, you get the various pest exterminators. They could be lawyers, they could be, I don't know, get rid of these. Anyway, so instead of that, the most important thing to do is to care. I just love that little saying, to care, not to cure. I think you all know that story. I was just going through some old newsletters and saw the future doctor in question. You know, a little fellow, maybe about 6 or 7 years of age, at the one of the Dharma schools which we had. And this doctor, he is also a photo of him when he just graduated, got permission to be a doctor. I gave him a blessing. And seeing him through all those years of hard work in the medical school, and finally he was a doctor, and one day when he came to me, can't do this any longer, I've got to resign. Why? Why, after all that hard work, he was, you know, he was a very, very good person. Why do you want to give up being a doctor at this stage when you're already working as a doctor? And of course that's when he told me what had happened. That very boy, it was a Saturday afternoon, the meditation at Nonamara Temple. He said that morning, one of his patients had died unexpectedly. No one's fault, it was just they didn't pick it up. It's a very rare disease or something. And the trouble was the situation that she was really young, 23, 24-year-old girl, married, two kids. And this doctor had to go. It was his job, he couldn't give it to somebody else. He had to go and tell the husband that your wife has died. It was unexpected, out of the blue. And the worst thing was like, as he said, it was like sticking a knife in someone and twisting it. Your two children have got no mother. She's died. And you can only sort of imagine the pain, you know, on that man's face, the love of his life, the mother of his children, who he'd expected, oh, had a little sickness, should get better, just been taken out of his life forever. And it was just, whew, totally devastated. And the doctor, who had, you know, sympathy, empathy, just could feel just a fraction of the pain in that husband, who now had no mother for his children, no wife. He said he couldn't take that any longer. He said, I can't do this again. The very, very possibility of having to do this again would just meant he can't be a doctor any longer. And of course, you know, he's still a doctor, and there was a solution. The solution was that he'd misunderstood the purpose of being a medical practitioner. I said, look, your job, your main purpose is not to cure your patients. If you think that you have to cure them, then you're going to fail many times. And of course you can sometimes see that people cure at all costs. It is really painful, expensive, and sometimes hopeless interventions. Well, you never know, it might work, but you know it's not going to work. And these interventions to cure at all costs is sometimes, what are you doing that for? Because curing is the most important for a doctor. I say, no. Caring is more important than curing. So care for the patient. You know, if you make caring more important than curing, many of those very intrusive, painful, you know, very small likelihood of succeeding interventions would never be done. Because caring is more important than curing. And when I mentioned that, I said also, curing, you can never be sure whether you can do that or not, whether it's possible. You're always going to be a failure if you think curing is most important. But caring, you can always do that.
no matter what stage of the illness you are facing, no matter how sort of hopeless it is, you can always care. You can't always cure. And if you make curing your main purpose of being a medical practitioner, or being a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a physiotherapist, a dentist, a monk, a husband, a wife, if you were going to try and cure your husband of all his stupid behaviour, forget it. Caring for him, yeah, you can always do that. And you will find if you make curing the main thing, you get into a lot of trouble and frustration. You make caring the most important. Something you can always do. And you find as how powerful and successful you become. You manage to get far more people out of their illnesses through caring for them than you do through curing. Curing is like the byproduct. When caring is your main thing, then curing happens. If you care for your wife, you find her habits which you wanted to cure are just disappear through caring. So caring is the most important. So now is the most important time. Caring is the most important thing to do. And who is the most important person? And the answer was, you know, the one right in front of you, whoever that happens to be. But what's that got to do with meditation? Such a simple, powerful meditation technique. Now is the most important time. So enlightenment's either here or it's nowhere. Peace, happiness, contentment, right here. Now, what is the most important meditation object? Ajahn Brahm, you haven't taught us how to do breath meditation, insight meditation, metta meditation. Give us an object, please, Ajahn Brahm. Teach us how to meditate. What are you aware of right now? What is this right now? That is the most important meditation object. Whatever you're aware of, what's right in front of your mindfulness right now. Like the Emperor's Three Questions. So you close your eyes, what am I aware of? Tiredness. It's important. Be with it. Don't try and get rid of it. Don't try and cure it. Care for it. It's teaching you something. So caring for whatever happens, you're restless. So thinking about this, thinking about that, thinking what I'm going to teach next, thinking about the cup of tea afterwards, thinking about... If that's right in front of you, right now, care for it. Give it importance. And you will find if you give whatever's in front of you importance, you are now aware. You're mindful. If you're trying to get rid of something, you're not really mindful. Half your mind is on this, trying to get rid of it, and the other half is where you want to be next. You're divided. So, if you're aware of what's happening right now, and you're caring for this restless mind, this stupid mind, this tired mind, if you truly care for it, and give it importance, then you find some amazing things happen. You're meditating, and you become peaceful. You're learning from the mind, instead of trying to control it. You're at peace with it. It's very powerful, very simple, very authentic way of meditating. Whatever's in front of your mind right now, please give it importance. Don't try and get rid of it. Don't try and make it something else. Be with it. Learn from it. I don't know why, but it's important for you. Give it importance. Care for it. And soon it will become the most amazing meditation. Sometimes it's like sitting on a cold, hard stone bench called the present moment. You first sit in the present moment, it's not that comfortable. It's cold and it's hard, but it's important, it's right here. The longer you stay with this, the softer it becomes. The cold gets warmed up. The bench becomes smooth. the bench becomes soft, like it's upholstered. The bench becomes so comfortable after a while. This is a simile of what happens when you sit with your body and mind. Now is the most important time. Whatever you experience is experiencing is the most important thing in the world. Care for it. Which means that no matter how tired, sick, whatever diseases you have, or I should have told people that I do have, it's been confirmed that I have a contagious disease. You know my contagious disease? It's called Hepatitis B. Hepatitis Buddhism. So not hepatitis. Hepatitis, that's a bit dangerous. But Hepatitis. So be careful, you hang around me long enough, you're going to catch it. It's contagious. It's not dangerous. But anyhow, this is how we learn how to make meditate no matter where you are, no matter how you feel. Because people sometimes, oh, I'm sick, I'm in hospital, I've got this disease, that disease, I just had chemotherapy, I just had a surgery, oh, it hurts, I can't meditate. I said, what the heck are you talking about? You haven't understood what meditation is. You think of meditation as achieving something, getting somewhere, seeing beautiful lights and jhanas. Yeah, I mean, those things happen. But not when you want them. Not because you strive for them. You make them flee away. But this is the most important time right now. Whatever you're experiencing as fully as possible, by giving it importance, and then be kind to it. And from there, your meditation opens up. You can meditate anywhere, any place, in any situation. And lovely things happen. So, that is today's meditation instructions. So, now, it's the most important time because it's time for me to go. So have a good day. Take it easy. Now the first full day, you know, just do some walking around the place. You can have cups of tea or actually, you can have cups of tea now. I've got the electricity back. You got juices, water, shower. You can try meditating sort of flat out if you're tired. So whatever you need to do, and as I said again last night, ask your body, what do you need right now? And listen. Body, do you need exercise? Do you need a drink? Or is that just, you know, indulging? What do you want, body? And then, what do you want, mind? Mind, how are you? What do you want right now? What your mind tells you, it's not indulgence. You find the mind is very sharp. And it says, take a rest, have a shower, have a cup of tea, meditate. Meditate on the stupa, on the grass. Just find a nice quiet place. And you can feel. If you work with your body by being mindful of it, you find meditation goes so smooth and easy. And you get surprised just how easy meditation is when you stop fighting and you care for your body and mind. So there we go. Sadhu. 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 Okay, I wish you a happy morning.